Welcome back, combatants, to the Anything Combat Show, where we discuss everything mixed martial arts. I'm your host, Johnny K, and today we're joined by a fighter who's been in some of the best fights in the history of martial arts. I'm talking K1, Pride, and the UFC. He's the king of the walk-off knockout, the 2001 K1 World Grand Prix champion. Please welcome to the show, Mark Hunt. How are you, Mark?
What's up, brother? Thanks for having the show. Appreciate it, Johnny.
So, bro, let's talk about Mike Tyson. That's the rumor going around. Is this the fight to make?
Yes, of course. It sounds like there's a fight to make right there. Look, you know, if it happens, if it comes to fruition, why not? It'll be a great match. Geez, he's a legend. Like I said, I grew up watching Mike also, but be good to finish my career with a fight against, the Iron Mike.
Do you want that, like, in Dubai, Saudi Arabia? What arena did you say?
It depends on where the manager puts it. That's all, you know. Depends if they're in talks with them now, so we'll see what happens. Manager may be telling me, you know, all sorts of things, but we've been talking with a lot of other people too, like in Ghana's camp. A few different people. There's a few things going on in Saudi, to be honest. So, yes, sir.
How do you think your style matches up with his?
We're both older gentlemen now, no? So, you know, I mean, like I said, it'll be just, whoever gets there first, to be honest.
There's a guy that I read you don't really like, Lorenzo Hunt. So what started the beef? Why don't you like this guy?
Well, I mean, not that I don't like him. I just think he's a funny guy. I watched him fight with Hector Lombard, and he makes me laugh, Lorenzo Hunt, to be honest. I'm pretty sure it's the same guy I met a long time ago in Florida, to be honest. But it's not that I hate the guy. He makes me laugh. Yeah, I think he's quite funny.
I saw that very funny post that you put about Dave Feldman with Dana, and you were like, fuck, I'm not getting into the BKFC now. So can you tell me, do you think Dana would put an event on the same day if you had an event in the BKFC? Do you think he would do some scummy thing like that?
Well, I don't know, to be honest. I didn't think, from what I was told, he never spoke about bare knuckle ever. He disliked it, to be honest. But, you know, since I blew the internet up about coming back and fighting bare knuckle, because I love bare knuckle, it'll be a new challenge. It'll be, you know, and it's a pretty violent sport, to be honest. But like I said, I saw the picture. I was like, oh, okay. But like I said, next week is, management's talking with Dave to see if we can, cross the T's and dot the I's. We'll see what happens next week for sure. Like I said, it would be a pretty shit move if that guy came and tried to close me off just because of the fact that we have issues, you know what I mean? But I wouldn't put it past him, to be honest. Like I said, we've had issues and we've still got issues ongoing now for a very long time. I mean, I hadn't had an MMA fight since I left the UFC. You know, like I said, I've spoken to a lot of different companies, but we just never closed any deals, you know. You know, I can't really say if it was a coincidence, you know, with the issues I had with the lawsuits, but, you know, only time will tell, to be honest.
Would you want to rematch Sefo in maybe the PFL?
I mean, I talk with Ray. We're friends. I think Ray's moved on to doing to being the boss of the company. I think I'm pretty much the last of my era of fighters that's still looking forward to compete. Probably if I do get a chance to compete, it'll be the oldest, and make history doing that. To be the oldest fighter to win about it'd be amazing. It'd be a bare knuckle bout. That'd be crazy.
You had an interesting statement. You said that God made you fight. Like, you didn't want to become a fighter, but this is what God had for you. So do you truly believe this?
Yes, of course. I mean, of course I did. I mean, how I started fighting was I didn't go to the gym. I had, you know, I had 4 days of training, and I was actually in my first Muay Thai fight. So, I wasn't training at all, and I was just going around traveling with a trainer and doing fights every time I saw the Sam the Bouncer and said, oh, would you like to fight next week? Yeah, sure. You know, I wasn't actually looking at it to do it. I only took it up serious when I came here to Oz, to be honest, and I didn't really see a path for it until 2001 when K1 and Tarek Solak put the shows on for the Oceania fighters. So I, myself, and a few other fighters from the Oceania, looked at this as becoming a way to try and become part of the top end and make money from it and make a living from it. Because, back when I was coming through, you only knew where the boxers went to. You didn't know where the kickboxers went to, So, but, being provided with this opportunity from K1, from Tarek Solak, starting in Melbourne, I started my career in Melbourne with the K1. So, of course, I believe God put me here to fight. I mean, I had no ambitions of being a top-end world-class prize fighter. And here you go, 30-something years later, I'm still here. And about to embark on the last bit of my journey, you know what I mean? Which is crazy, which is the gypsy fighting, which is like from where I started this rubbish. I shouldn't say rubbish, from where I started competing.
I watched a doco about your career. Now, people on YouTube, they always get shit wrong. So I just want to clarify some stuff. So when I was watching it, it said that you had some fights in the street and that a bouncer invited you to go to the kickboxing gym. Is that what happened?
This is correct. That's how I started fighting. And maybe 4 days later or 7 days later, I was fighting in the same nightclub in that same nightclub inside on the ring, Muay Thai. So that's how I started fighting.
Are you still in contact with the bouncer?
Sam, yeah, he actually lives in the Cook Islands. Yeah.
Do you still train with them every so often?
I don't train with at all, but I actually haven't been training for a while. I just started getting back to it slowly. Like I don't really like to train if I'm not competing or doing anything. So I haven't done nothing. The last time people got me off the couch was, Kota, SBW's manager, to fight with him in boxing. And like I said, I was sitting on my couch eating cheesecake when he called me. So I'm like this, okay. So then when I got called again to do this, I'm like this, okay. So here I have to go back again and start putting in work.
Did you care about that fight at all with Sonny? Like when they called you, did it even interest you? Or did they say, here's the money, you're like, okay, easy knockout, done?
Well, it was sort of like the process. Like I said, I'm game to fight anyone in the world. I'm a prize fighter, and if the money's right, I'll do it. And I mean, like I said, I shied away from no battle. And when I was called by Kota to have a meeting, I said, yeah, okay. I had to go pick up my son, Noah. He was in a bit of strife at school, so I had to get him and have the meeting with Kota. The deal was done, the fight was made, and it is what it is, what happened. So,
Let me take you back to one of your greatest achievements. Probably, in my opinion, the best one is the 2001 K1 Grand Prix, right? This is an insane achievement. This is just a wild bracket. I just watched it last night. I watched all the recaps, all the fights, and just crazy fights all around. So I want to ask you, when you got the check and you won the championship and it bounced you into, the martial arts mainstream, how did this change your life?
It didn't actually change my life. It didn't change my life at all. It just made me realize, I was like, well, I when I started fighting, when I first went out and competed in Japan, I went from a small stadium in the Crown Casino, 1,000-seater, to a 40,000-stadium arena going, wow. I got stage fright against the first fight in Jerome. But after that, I never got stage fright again. It was always, I felt I belonged a part of the elite. And me winning the World K1 title just made me realize that, it was all God's doing. And he pushed me toward this sort of life, a life of affliction, which is fighting. And to winning that, it didn't change my life, but I already knew I was the elite, one of the best fighters in the world. Being able to win that just wasn't just all talk. I just proved it. So, yeah.
I've got a hard question for you now. So there's a lot of people that are blessed with good genetics or blessed that they know how to fight. Do you think that fighting came easy to you? And then going into the ring came easy to you? Or do you think that's all bullshit, it's all for show, and that you train really hard, you had some talent, and then you became even better?
I don't think people are blessed knowing how to fight. You have to learn how to fight. You know, people are like myself. I was, you know, I was not blessed. I was dealt some ugly cards. You know, I was in a life of affliction with my parents. You know, my dad beating the crap out of me. So what I learned from my childhood was being able to tolerate affliction. My pain level and threshold were really high coming, and you know, a fighter's life is the life of pain, especially kickboxers. So you don't really know, you're not really blessed how to fight. You have to learn how to fight. You know what I mean? What I did learn, like I said, but you become more able to learn about fighting if you are capable of tolerating pain. So yeah, you have to learn how to fight in the gym, or someone teaches you, like everything else, you have to learn. But your level of pain tolerance enables you to go further and further. Because at the top end, there's not much between, there's like inches about the best fighters in the world. It's just about, it comes down to their mind and how much they can take in their mind tolerance. That's all it is.
Mark, where are you located in Australia? Are you in Sydney?
Yes, I'm in Sydney. I've been here for like 27, I've been over half my life in Sydney. Western Sydney.
When are you coming to Melbourne so you and me can pack out the Crown Casino and fight each other?
You got the money, I got the fucking will. Now my missus lives in Melbourne, so yeah, like I said, if the price is right, I'm a prize fighter anytime. Hopefully we can, you know, next week, you know, cross the T's and dot the I's for a bare knuckle contract, and you know, hopefully we can bring bare knuckle down to Melbourne and Etihad Arena and pack it up. This year coming, hopefully, you know, we'll see what happens. Got to start somewhere, but yeah.
That's a great idea. I want to ask you about the Goodridge fight. So during this fight, it was bandaged, it was fucked up, and you couldn't fight how you usually fight. So I want to ask you, how bad was your leg actually going into this fight?
Well, I just come back from a surgery, posterior cruciate ligament, PCL surgery. It was the second one I had. It was the first one I had in K1. I got injured in the 2001, the world title 2002 when I lost the world title after Stefan Leko fucked my leg up. Jerome snapped my ligament in the second fight, and I was recovering. So that was my first fight back in Vegas against Gary Goodridge, I think it was. And I think I was just, that was my last fight ever with K1. I was about to move into Pride. So, yeah, I was just coming back from PCL surgery.
When you ended up.
That was. Yeah.
2003?
I think it was, because 2002, it might have been 2002 because I'd won the world title. No, it might have been 2000 and I had a year off. So it might have been 2002.
I was born 2003.
Oh, actually, sorry, 2003, because what happens is I won the world title 2001, 2002 I lost the title, and then it was 2003 where I had a year off because I was trying to heal my injury, 2003 when I came back to fight in Vegas. So
I was born 2003. So how does that make you feel that you're still kicking in, you're going to fight again?
That makes me feel great. It makes me feel like like I said, I've always felt blessed by God, but like everybody that asked me, I said, you know, just you being alone makes you special. You know, you being, everything you do, no one else can do. The way you look, the way you do things makes you special by itself. But when you say to me, oh, I wasn't even born, I said, a lot of people weren't born when I was still fighting. And me to still being fighting at this stage shows the legacy. After I win this, do this stuff this year, it'll be just great. I feel blessed to be able to still do it if I'm going to do it this year. So,
how much MMA experience did you have when you were in K1 and then you moved on and fought in Pride? How much MMA experience did you have? How long were you training for?
I had zero experience. So, like I said, I did a press conference with, you know, the Pride. And I was new to Pride, and all the greats were there, you know, Fedor, everyone was there. You know, they asked me, Fodor asked me, oh, Mark, how much ground experience have you done? How much ground work have you done? And I said, oh, I did about 8 hours. And everyone just started laughing. The whole room started laughing. And I said, oh, you know, it was a good 8 hours in my mind. But but no, I had no experience of MMA, to be honest. I just, I was new to the block.
Your arch nemesis, I want to ask you about Jerome Le Banner. So when you were fighting this dude and you won the fight by knockout, what was going through your mind? Did you think to yourself, like, fuck this technical shit, I'm gonna close him down and knock him out? Like, what was going through your mind during this fight?
Well, for me, like I said, God put me to fight that whole night, even the day of the week before. I was ready to go. It was the best. Even before that, I was smoking. I used to smoke cigarettes. So I stopped smoking for 8 weeks to train for that tournament. And then I went and fought. And as I was battling with it, I knew that I was going to win that whole tournament. I had this feeling in my heart of calmness and beating Jerome. Because, like, as you remember, Jerome and I fought four times. I've only won one.
I know.
And that's the one that matters. You know, to me, that's the one that matters. I fought four times against Jerome Le Banner because he's one of the toughest fighters that I've faced ever, but I won the one that mattered. And that, for me, made me really, that's all that matters in the end. But, he's beaten me three times, and I've only beaten him once. But that was for the world title. That's when it really counted. And, like, everything, I turn up when it comes to town. You know, I turn up, I pull up easy. But, yeah.
Let's talk about Mike Tyrrell. So why is this guy saying that he wants to fight you? Do you even care about this dude? There's so many bigger names than this guy. It's almost like you're kind of putting this dude on fighting him. You know what I mean? You're putting him on. It's not like he's putting you on. You get what I'm saying?
You're talking about the bare knuckle world champion, man. So at the end of the day, he might not be a well-known person to the globe, but at the end of the day, he's got the title. He's got the world championship belt. You know, I was speaking with Mick, I've seen him. He's quite a nice guy. End of the day, he owns that title. That's that I want. I mean, it's like I said, it's pretty straightforward. You know what you're going to get with bare knuckle. Two guys with no gloves, no nothing. Just pretty much gypsy fighting, and it's easy to get cut. It's pretty. I think it's the most violent sport on the planet. And we'll see. Like I said, we'll see next week if things come to fruition with the contract. But yeah, he's got that belt.
So seeing that you were K1, and this new BKFC endeavor, I want to ask you about the clinch in particular. So, you know how they do the single collars and they're always slamming body shots and dirty uppercuts, that dirty boxing style. So do you think this favors you in any regard, seeing that I know you could clinch in MMA and, you know, you had your K1, but in K1 there wasn't as many, there's not that much clinching involved. So how do you think that relationship goes with your style?
I feel my style for bare knuckle is perfect, to be honest. It's hard to hurt me. It's hard to cut me. If I hit you, I'll cut your face up. I got plenty of scars on my hands from gypsy fighting from when I was younger. Like I said, it's hard to cut someone like me. But, man, if I hit you, even while you're clinching me, it's going to be trouble. It's hard to hurt this head. Trust me. It's hard to cut me. I'm built for this sort of battle. So if you're clinching me, you better get some good shots on, because, man, I hit you one time, it's later, cuz.
Why did you put your hands down and let Ray Sefo punch you in your fight with him, the iconic moment?
I was just tired. I didn't get much training. I got 3.5 weeks of training. I was at a party when I got called to make that offer for that fight. So, I was doing my best. I did my best in that fight. I was tired.
Without titles involved, without accomplishments involved, you fought boxing, MMA, and kickboxing. What would you say was your favorite to fight in?
They've all been pretty good. I just, apart from, MMA, the tarnishing I got from that is from, the lawsuits I'm in now with the battling with the company to try and make things even for other fighters. And then, like I said, K1 and boxing were pretty good. I've had issues with both. I think they'll all be the same, the whole lot of them. The only thing that stands out the most was is MMA because of these lawsuits.
So I know that we can't really talk too much about those, but just a question in particular, because I'm actually intrigued. So with the UFC, you did so much for that company. You had so many fights, and now it's kind of ended a little bit poorly. So I would want to ask you, do you think that it's all business and, like, you know, it was just kind of part of it? Or do you think that Dana's just fake nice guy? Like, what's your conclusion from everything that you've dealt with the company?
You know, what I dislike the most is when people say to me, especially corporates and business people, saying, "Oh, it's just business." But when you're dealing with people's families and kids and what it provides for them, it's not just business. You ripping me off, you allowing steroids guys to fight me, to hurt me, to cut me from earning a living for my family, is not just business. It's personal. And I think every fighter should see this and understand when they're getting cheated like they're doing now and getting ripped off by these companies that say, and when they do that to you, they just call it business. It isn't. It's personal. It becomes anything to do with your family and kids. It's personal. And that's the way I look at it. And I've always looked at it. And that's why I've tried to make things even as I've moved out of the sport. And still, like I said, in the battle, and they've, you know, to be honest with you, I don't think they're not going to be around for another couple of years. They're not going to be doing the things they're doing already. There's a lot of issues that are coming that they already have right now. They're going to get a whole lot more issues coming their way. And certainly they won't be having any more shows in Australia, New Zealand. So
what you're telling me is that you're not the main event for UFC 300?
No. No. To be honest, to tell the truth, I wouldn't want to work for that company anymore. That title is a title that's worth nothing. It represents nothing. And all that represents, that title, the UFC title, that all these guys have got, all that represents is exploitation. That's all it represents. And all the guys like me and the guys that have been there, done that, know that. They look at it and go, ugh, you're the world champion UFC. Oh, garbage. Because that's all it is. It's a garbage title. You don't have to, like I said, you don't have to take it from what I say. Take it from the past. You know, you got Ngannou just here, takes that world title, drops it in the rubbish and goes, what a rubbish title that is. Ain't worth the cow that died for it, my friend.
Moving on to something a little bit more fun so we don't hammer on the negatives. Let's talk about Nakasako. He hit you with the head kick. This was one of the craziest head kicks I've ever seen. Can you tell me what this felt like?
Well, like I said, from that fight, I was, again, lack of training and ended up getting, it was like any knockouts that I've had, it's always like a light bulb. You just turn the light on, turn the light off. That's what it felt like.
Really? It felt like you were asleep and then you just woke up?
Just like, man, the worst one that I got knocked out was, I think I've only been knocked out three times. The worst one was against the little midget guy. What's that guy, the other steroid using guy? I forgot his name. But anyway, he knocked me out and I got caught. But the light turned off, came back on, but I was still in la-la land even when I went to the shower because I was confused as, am I supposed to be fighting? Because that's, you know, I was out of training. I took the fight like it was a waste of time. I didn't give respect to that guy. And that's why I paid for it.
When I was watching your doco, it said something about your manager at the time and that you had a whole bunch of issues with him and that he was dodgy. So what did he do to you? Why did you have problems with your manager at the time?
Was that the manager from K1?
Yes.
Okay, so his name is Dixon MacGyver. He was a crook. He sold me short on contracts. My first work contract ever with K1, he sold me short on. You know, when I started that, I was like open checkbook if I win this fight, this tournament. come my first knockout, Tarek walks in, he comes in, look, I'll give you 500,000 a fight. You know, ended up the next day at the negotiation table, it was a piece of paper came out of the table, it was $60,000 per fight. I looked at my manager on my left side and I said, Dixon, is this the best I can do? And they wanted $60,000 per fight for 5 years. And I said, and he said, yes. He said, Dixon goes, yeah, perfect. I was 27 years old. I just won close to $1 million. I was like, okay, that's great. That's good money. Because he said it was good money. So I signed the contract, but not for five, for 2 years. To put into perspective, you know, guys I've met like Ignashoff. He signed a contract like that for 6 years for $25,000 US. So it goes to perspective. These guys are crooked, you know. And I had a dealing with this guy, especially with a fight against Jerome Leban in Paris, because you know, anyway, he was Dixon McGovern. He's a crook. He was no good at doing contracts. He was only good at doing contracts for himself. So, like for fighters that get management, you got to make sure they're the right management. Otherwise, they're gonna stiff you while they're looking at you. They'll rip you off while you're looking at you. You got to understand about your own contracts and how it works, and you got to know your worth. That's the main thing. You got to know how much your worth is to be able to garnish a good contract for yourself. That's why I say about the fighters these days, you know, getting contracts. Well, even with the UFC these days, they're getting ripped off royally with garbage contracts, and you know, the use by date is quick, so they're gonna use up all their youth to chase something that's gonna give them no money. Then when they finish, what are they gonna do? Anyway, just some words of advice from experience for that.
I do want to ask you about that. Do you feel like in your life you've been too nice to people that were either malicious to you or you know, didn't have your best interests at heart?
Well, a lot of people have taken advantage because, you know, you think they've got the right intentions, but they're all just crooks out for money. But, you know, like for myself, there's no U-Hauls behind a U-Haul vans behind a hearse. You know, you can't take it with you. End of the day, you know, you can only leave it for your children and stuff. So that's not on me, though. That's not me to feel guilty. That's on these people that are criminals to do that. That's on them. You know, I can sit here and talk to you or go anywhere and not have to worry about someone coming behind me for collection. You know, I can only, the only person I ever have to answer to is God. That's it.
Moving on back to the fighting. So with Ernesto Hoost, I want to ask you, seeing that he's such an important figure in kickboxing and people think of him as the best of the best, I want to ask you, is this a milestone in your career? Do you think back at this fight, thinking about it, because of how the quality and the caliber of opponent?
Well, like all the top-end guys of K1, like I said, me being a part of it, I just brought my own style to it. I just, of course, I mean, part of the elite, you've got to bring your own character, your own fight style, and your own stuff. And that's, you know, whether Ernesto was a goat or, like I said, when I won the world title, my ambition and my goals to keep doing that ended because I'd done it already. It was like flogging a dead horse. I wanted a new challenge, and I found that with MMA. I mean, Peter Ertz, Sammy Schilt, Ernesto Hoost, you know, won the title 7-8 times. But yeah, you know, like I said, I only needed to do it once. My dream was over for that. And then a new challenge came, another mountain, which was MMA.
Who tried to make you throw fights? How much did they offer you? And then you refused, of course, but how much did they offer you to throw fights?
Well, there was only one time I've been offered to take a dive, and that was here in my own home. And the annoying thing about that was, for me, it was $3 million. It wasn't the amount of the money. It was actually the person delivering the message.
That's a lot of money, man.
I know it's a lot of money. But from context, listen to what I'm saying. When that person spoke to me, it wasn't the amount of the money. It was what it was. I mean, regardless, because I mean, I could have used their money. I was broke. I was going through a separation. I was having issues. I could have used their money a lot, but it wasn't the amount of it. It was the person that was delivering their message, like how it started was, you know, it was like, you know, your society's taken advantage of, blah, 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 and so forth. I'm thinking, bro, what are you talking about? You know, our kids are playing in the next room and you're trying to put me in fucking jail. You know, and what annoys me the most about it is that I didn't give a shit about the amount of it because wasn't going to do it anyway. But it was like, how it was delivered. I was like, taking a dive? Me? What? You know, I've been in jail a couple of times already as a youth. And now you're trying to put me back in jail. You know, it didn't make sense. You know, regardless where people have said, I came through pride, I came through this and that organization. That has got nothing to do with some person in front of me that I thought I knew trying to deliver me a message saying, oh, would you like to go to jail for $3 million? And I'm like, this, although I like my time in jail, no is the answer. You know what I mean? It's like, fuck, are you serious? You know, but that's what really annoying. People say, you're making shit up. I don't make shit up. Why would I want to, you know, sit here shit in your fucking bed or make that up for? I mean, you can go and ask the crime commission when they pull me in about it. If I'm telling shit or not, you know, then you'll know about it.
What was your favorite knockout from your career? You've got so many walk-offs. Which one stands out for you? Which one do you hang up in your home?
There's only one knockout that I'm going to admire and put up on my walls. Is when I crossed the UFC and Dana White this year. That is the only one I'm going to put up, you know. And it's going to make me laugh because all these people that have been hating on me, talking down about me because the false narratives that the UFC have put on me with all their trolls, I'm going to end them just like I'm going to end Dana White.
How about we do celebrity boxing? We do you versus Dana. What do you think?
Like I said, I'm a prize fighter. I clearly know he wouldn't do it. But like I said, yeah.
Why do you like fighting so much?
Not that I like fighting, I just like what fighting provides. I mean, I'm here, I'm fighting, going to be fighting in my 50s because I need the money. If my court case goes to trial, I need a way to pay for it. As you can see, they're trying to cut me off already. But, you know, what they don't understand is that this case, the Ninth Circuit's allowed me to go forward with this case without having to pay. So regardless of what he's trying to do, you know, the end for them is coming. And that makes me laugh and smile because they've put me for fucking shit for 7-8 years, mentally and financially.
You spent so much time in Japan. Let's talk about the crowds. So did you have more fun with the crowds in the US crowds or the Japanese crowd?
I for a certain time, I did. I love fighting in Japan because, you know, the atmosphere was amazing. It's always better to be at a live event than watching it on the TV because you never get that vibe of excitement from there. And like I said, every crowd is, you know, it depends on how you're feeling at the time as a fighter. So I enjoyed my time fighting in front of the Japanese people, and I also enjoyed my time fighting in front of the American public. So like I said, I enjoy fighting when everything is right. I don't enjoy fighting when other things are going on. I think every fight is the same.
Final question for today is which fighter or coach do you think impacted your career the most, as in who you learned from the most?
Well, I can't say any one of them in particular. All of them, you know, Happy, Alex Tui, you know, San Doi, Marcelo Resende, Steve Oliver, Alex Flint. So all my coaches, Mal, all my coaches throughout my years of fighting have helped me in certain ways. You know, Justin, a lot of my coaches, Cole, being, you know, friends, a lot of them have touched me in different ways, and that's why a fighter, if he gets a good rapport with any coach, will go anywhere for them. You know, they'll walk through fire for their coaches, only because they've got a good rapport. If you don't have a good rapport with any coach, then, you know, coaches like Lolo Hemuli, I mean, you just wouldn't be able to do the things you would be able to do unless you've got a good rapport with their coach. So, yeah, all of them. I can't say one. And I'm sorry if I'm not any, but I think that's all the coaches I've had throughout my time. So, anyway, yeah.
That's all we have time for, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Mark, for your time. Is there any final remarks, maybe some words of wisdom you can give the people if they need to hear something? What do you have for them?
Well, I mean, hope is always the best word for everyone. Doesn't matter what situation you're in. Always have a hope. There's always going to be a light at the end of the tunnel. And I always try to do better than others. I mean, in the sense of do better than the ones that have come before you. I think here, for me, being my job, I feel is I'm supposed to be here to serve others. And that's why I feel you should pass along to everyone else. So hopefully things change. I know things will change for MMA in the next year or so. So still working on it, and I'm gonna get there. So thanks for the time, Johnny, and thanks for the time on your podcast.
Follow Mark Hunt on Instagram, link in the
Thanks, bro.
description, and follow Anything Combat. We will see you guys next time. Bye bye.